and of our unborn child. I wonder why it is that one feels so strongly about an unborn child. I particularly did not want to be branded by posterity as a clever opportunist who pretended to be a fool, lying low and biding his time until he got wind of a palace intrigue against his emperor, and then came boldly forward as a candidate for the succession. This continuation of my story should serve as an apology for the crooked course that I have taken in my 13 years of empire. I hope, that is to say, to justify my seemingly inconsistent acts at different stages of my reign, by showing their relation to the professed principles from which I have, I swear, never intentionally departed. If I cannot justify them, then I hope at least to show the extraordinarily difficult position in which I was placed, and leave my readers to decide what alternative course, or courses, remained for me to take. So, to pick up the thread, just where I dropped it. First, let me repeat that things might have turned out considerably worse for Rome if Herod Agrippa, the Jewish king, had not happened to be here on a visit. He was the only man who really kept his head in the crisis of Caligula's assassination, and saved the entire audience of the Palatine Hill Theatre from massacre by the German Household Battalion. It is a strange thing, but until almost the last page of my story, my readers will not have come across a single direct reference to Herod Agrippa's surprising history, though it intertwined closely with mine at several points. The fact was that to have done justice to his adventures, as worth reading about on their own account, would have meant making him too important a figure in the story I had to tell. Its chief centre of emphasis lay elsewhere. As it was, my story was constantly in danger of becoming burdened with matter of doubtful relevance. It was as well that I took this decision, because he does figure most importantly in what follows, and I can now, without any fear of digressive irrelevance, tell the story of his life up to the point of Caligula's murder, and then continue it concurrently with my own until I reach his death. In this way, there will be no such weakening of dramatic unity as would have occurred if I'd spread the story over 2 books. I do not mean that I am a dramatic historian. As you have seen, I'm rather wary of literary formalism. But as a matter of fact, one could not possibly write about Herod without presenting the story in somewhat of a theatrical style. For this was how Herod himself lived, like the principal actor in a drama, and his fellow actors played up to him well throughout. His was not a drama in the purest classical tradition, although his life was finally cut off in classical tragic style by the conventional divine vengeance for the conventional Greek sin of arrogance. No, there were too many un-Greek elements in it. For instance, the god who inflicted the vengeance on him was not one of the urbane Olympian community. He was perhaps the oddest deity that you could find anywhere in my extensive dominions, or out of them, for that matter. A god of whom no image is in existence, whose name his devout worshippers are forbidden to pronounce, though in his honour they clip their foreskins and practice many other curious and barbarous rites. And who is said to live alone at Jerusalem in an ancient cedar chest lined with badger skins dyed blue, and to refuse to have anything to do with any other deities in the world, or even to acknowledge the existence of such. And then there was too much farce mixed up with the tragedy to have made it a fit subject for any Greek dramatist of the Golden Age to handle. Imagine the impeccable Sophocles faced with the problem of dealing in a serious poetical vein with Herod's debts. But, as I was saying, I must tell you at some length what I did not tell you before, and the best plan would be to finish off the old history here and now before getting into my stride with the new. So, here finally begins the story of Herod Agrippa. Herod Agrippa was, you must understand, no blood relation or connection by marriage of the great Marcus Vipsanius Agrippa, Augustus's general, who married his only daughter Julia, and became by her the grandfather of my nephew Gaius Caligula and my niece Agrippinilla. Nor was he a freedman of Agrippa's, though you might have guessed that too, for in Rome it is the custom of slaves, when liberated, to assume their former master's surname by way of compliment.